plenty of decks don't get to draw three cards for one mana.
Well, I mean, all the good ones do.
Hi, I'm Jake.
And I'm Matt.
And welcome back to Cantrip Cartel. I'm sorry that we skipped last week. We were supposed to skip last week, but we forgot and didn't talk about it. And so I had made plans that basically kept us from recording on Tuesday. And then Matt hit me up, was like, "Were we supposed to record this week?" And I was like, "Oh fuck, we'll just record tomorrow." And then the next day, I think he had like a rough day at work or something. Like,
yeah,
just had something. You were a day that was not conducive to recording. And then Thursday, I got fucked at work. And by then, we were like, "We'll just take the week off we meant to." But it was just a scheduling error that anyone who tracks the schedule knew we weren't recording a podcast, but we said we were. And we suck. So, hey, it's Cantrip Cartel. We're here to talk magic and games and whatever we feel like. How you doing, Matt?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Work's been fine. So for anyone who, I guess I shouldn't say. I was going to say something, but I can't say. Because it's not common knowledge yet. I'll tell you after the podcast.
Okay.
Work's going well. Been a little busier, so that's good. Like, it feels like
currently
we are properly staffed as opposed to being, like, massively overstaffed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for a while there, it was just nothing to do.
Yeah, and I mean, like, it'd be like I spend 3 hours, I'd spend almost half my day in a cubicle, a lot of times consecutive hours, so not like, it'd just be like I just sit in a cubicle fucking around on TikTok or Twitter or whatever for, like, 3 or 4 hours in a row with just nothing to do. That hasn't happened. I'll still have some downtime, but it hasn't happened to that degree in a while.
I'm sure there are a lot of people that would love that kind of a job. I had that job once where you just sit around and do nothing for 8 hours or periods of time, and it's fucking awful, man.
In long stretches, it is. Like, I don't mind. Like, every now, like, so, like, today, we were pretty busy up until, like, 3 o'clock. And then it just, like, I didn't do anything from 3 to 5, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, I was just sit from, like, 3 o'clock on, I was basically talking to my boss and, like, the other person who works there. We were all just basically just bullshitted for fucking 2 hours.
Yep.
And then I went home. And that was fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind having some downtime. And it's nice because, like, I don't really take, like, I technically take a lunch. And I do insist that I take it. Like, if they're going to make me clock out for it, I don't do anything. I don't even answer my phone because I don't work for free.
Yep, 100%.
But, like, I'd prefer just to not even take it. I'd rather just work. Like, if I'm there, I want to be being paid. And if I'm not being paid, I want to go home. So I'd rather just go home a half hour sooner. But it's, you know, policy, whatever. So I just do my job and I take my lunch and whatnot. But it's nice to just be like, oh, cool. Like, because I was running around quite a bit. And then I just came in and was like, oh, well, there's nothing to do now. So I guess I'll just chill and bullshit for a couple hours and then go home.
We get those occasionally at the farm that I work at where, like, there's just this kind of down period where we have, like, you know, 30 minutes to an hour of we have something scheduled we have to go do. And there's just, you just can't wait. We can't start any projects for 30 minutes. So we just kind of sit around and chit chat, or we get to the end of the day, you know, we're all leaving in the next 30 minutes or an hour. So we kind of just hang out and we might discuss some plans for the coming day or week or whatever. But we just kind of chill out and chit chat for a little bit. That is very nice.
Yep. It's just a good way to, like, decompress. And the nice thing is when you do that, I don't know about you, but, like, I don't just, like, if I just teleported from work to home, that would not be good because I'm in work mode, and work mode Matt is just an entirely different person. So, like, I basically got to do the decompression, like, swap into, like, husband friend Matt at work, and then I just go home and I'm just already in a, you know, a good mood. And I've, not that I'm a bad mood at work, but I'm in a different mood. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, like, I'm a very different person at work than I, like, when shit needs to get done, I have a switch. And when I can flip that switch. And when we're in work mode, I'm a different person. And quite frankly, a lot of people don't like me when I'm in work mode, 'cause I don't take a whole lot of shit.
I really like you when you're in home mode.
I know, right? Well, imagine me if I didn't take any shit from you.
Oh, it'd be unbearable.
So, like, and so, like, it's, I try not to be in work mode when I come home to Amanda, because that's just not a good situation to be in. It's not that I'm, like, an asshole, but, like if somebody says something to me and I'm in work mode, like, it doesn't just, like, go unanswered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, you're going to hear back from me.
It's very different, like you said.
Yeah. So it was nice. It's just nice to have like a little decompression time. So work's been going well. I will say this. Video games right now, Unicorn Overlord is amazing. It is by far my game of the year. I haven't quite beat it yet. I will probably beat it at least two more times, one on each difficulty. It is one of the best games I've played in a very long time.
Is that like on Steam?
I don't know. I don't know. It's you could probably play it on your PlayStation 4.
Is it not a PC game? Is it a console game?
Yeah, it's a console game.
Oh, well, it sucks then.
You can also play it on your Switch, which it would be an amazing game for Switch. Like, I was really heavily debating getting it for my Switch instead of my PlayStation because it's just RPGs are great on, like, handhelds because they're not huge spectacles, so you don't need a giant... it looks great, and it looks great on my TV, but I don't need a giant TV to make this game fun and playable because it's not really about the spectacle.
So I'll be honest, looking at the stills on Google, it looks like a mobile game.
Yeah.
I don't mean that as an insult.
No, I know.
I just as a perspective for people, like it looks like a mobile game. Like is it like limited animation? Is it one of those like where they have like real it's a style. Yeah, it's choppy animation style.
Yeah, it's not like it's hard to describe. I don't really know what it's called, but it'd be like they're almost like cutouts where they move around and they have like a few different positions they're in and they kind of like fade and stuff like that. I personally think the art style looks fantastic for what they're trying to do. It like nails it.
It's a great art. Have you ever seen Slay the Spire?
Yeah.
Played Slay the Spire?
I haven't played it, but I've seen it.
It looks kind of Slay the Spire-ish in the art. The way it's like, you have like it looks like you have a character cutout laid on top of a background. And I imagine they have some simple animations.
Yeah. So that's what they do for, so there's, there's four different parts of the game. So there's cutscenes, which will just have like a background, and then they'll have those cutout arts that kind of move around, and they have text boxes. All the cutscenes are fully voiced, which is impressive considering there's like somewhere between 50 and 100 voice acted characters.
Oh, that's huge.
Like the cast itself, like the unlockable characters that are all fully voice acted, there's like 60 that are like playable named characters. Then there's the battles themselves, which are the same kind of thing. Obviously, they amp up the animations and whatnot, and there's more characters moving around, and there's like the, you know, if you go to swing a sword or cast a spell or whatever, they'll say stuff like that. Then there's the overworld itself, which has a totally different view. It's kind of like an old school RPG with amped up graphics. So like everything's kind of out of proportion. So you roll up on a fucking castle and like your character is like a third of the size of the castle, that kind of thing.
Yep.
So like anybody who's played any of the PlayStation era or SNES era Final Fantasies will know exactly what I'm talking about. And then there's so the way the battles work is so like you're moving around the open world, right? You get to a level, you go into that level, and it turns into a simplified RTS. So like you have your objective, which for the most part is kill all the enemies and capture the base, but there's like conditions and whatnot you have to work around. Then you have your base, that's where you can spawn your units, and then any like outpost that you capture, you can also like spawn units there, so you can like progressively move through the level. And like, so you move your dudes around almost like movable, like mobile chess pieces and whatnot through a map. And like, when you bump into enemy characters, that's when it switches to the actual battle screen. And all of that is controlled by, effectively Final Fantasy XII's gambits, but they're more complex in one sense and less complex in another. Like it's somewhere in between, but like, it's just a whole bunch of like if then statements, and the AI basically, or AI or whatever you want to call it, fights the battles. And the cool thing is the enemy uses the same fucking system. So like I had a couple, like I had a big level up moment. I was in the Colosseum, which you just fight fights and try to climb ranks in the Colosseum. And that's how you unlock one of the characters. And like, I open up to like fight this, squad. And so like, I went there and I like kicked ass for the first few ranks. And then I got one that beat me. And so I was like, I opened up, looked at them, and then it took me a second. I didn't even click, but I looked at their commands, their gambits. I'm just going to call them gambits because that's the word I have called them since Final Fantasy XII. So I'm looking at their gambits, and it didn't occur to me, and I didn't realize that you could that it worked like this and you could do this. So for example, say you've got Fireball, and you want, like, the way it would work would be like, you'd go in there and you put Fireball in there and you'd be like, prioritize armored, prioritize flying, right? And that means just with that one gambit, that mage is, it's going to cast Fireball and it just works top to bottom. It's going to cast Fireball, assuming that it has a legal target and the resources to cast it. And it's going to prioritize enemies with armor or enemies that are flying, right? Pretty simple.
Yep.
What the enemy AI was doing was it would have Fireball on there like four fucking times. And it would be like, cast Fireball, target only armored. Cast Fireball, target only flying. Cast Fireball, target enemies that have AP, which is your points used to attack, and that have the least HP. Cast Fireball, targeting the least HP. So, like, it still works the same as far as, like, you're still in those four things. You're only ever going to cast Fireball. But you can prioritize targets a lot better, and you can set it up so, like, it's like, okay, if you've the armored guys are dead and the flying guys are dead, then I want you to move on to enemies that have actions left to take. And of those enemies, I want you to target the ones with the least HP because I know you'll kill them, right? And then if there's no enemies with AP, then you can target the person with the least HP. And I didn't know you could just put Fireball on there a bunch and basically set... Yeah. Effectively more than two conditions, like
a logic tree.
Yeah, well, like I knew that that's how the logic tree worked with two different abilities, but I didn't realize that the game would allow you to, because in it just worked a little bit different in Final Fantasy XII, and that's kind of what I was pulling from.
Yeah,
and I didn't realize that, like, because effectively what you're doing there is you're taking it and going, well, because the way the game presents it to you, you go, well, if I put Fireball on here, I get to choose two conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, you can actually pick like 15 conditions.
Yeah. That's, so when you basically gave the initial example, my first thought was like, well, how does the game like determine between these and what it like? I started running through very rudimentary like logic questions like, well, how does it resolve this? How would you? And I don't know how the game resolves it, but it sounds like a cool workaround to the game trying to resolve it itself is, yeah, you can just make all the decisions for it in the appropriate order.
Right. And that's what you're supposed to do. And like, as soon as I saw it do that, it immediately clicked and I was like, oh, I can do that. And like, it was just this huge, like, level up moment in this game. And I was like, I spent the next 2 hours, not even fighting, just completely retooling my entire team. And I was just like, oh my God, I fucking wreck things now.
I could totally see having a lot of fun, like a game you enjoy building those trees and optimizing like the order in which you roll through them and the most efficient way to kill your enemies. And I could have a lot of fun doing that. I bet that's awesome.
Well, and then you take into account the fact that there's like, I don't know exactly, but probably 30 different classes, probably, I mean, maybe somewhere between 30 and 50 different classes that all have strengths, weaknesses, and abilities. The gear changes a lot. So like you can equip a sword and it just radically changes your character. Mm-hmm. So like, and you can put that same sword on someone else and it's just not nearly as good. And here's the cool thing. They don't just give you 50 of the quote best sword. You get one. So like you have to use other pieces of gear and put them on and create different teams. Now you can hire mercenaries basically. So, like, you have your named characters, and a good chunk of, like, the story is especially the first part, is going around to different towns, liberating them. Because basically the story is there's the whole world, whatever, or this region, I guess. There's 4 or 5 continents. They're all controlled by an evil emperor who took over from you. You're a prince who... The evil emperor killed your mom. She set you off to like hide until you could become an adult and overthrow this evil empire, right?
Okay.
So the whole game is basically moving around the map and liberating towns. That's where your fights come in. Mm-hmm. So you're almost always fighting an offensive battle against like a manned thing. like a defensive position. So like that's how they introduce these characters, is like you'll run into a character there and you liberate their town, and a lot of times like they'll be like story stuff, and it'll be like if they're a bad guy, you can choose to just kill them, or
you can stab them in the street.
It'll literally like you win the fight, and it'll like they'll do the whole story thing, and they'll be like, well, do you want to try to give him mercy, or do you want to execute him? And you can just kill him, or if you don't kill them, they can run off, and there's like a whole bunch of story interactions with that, with a bunch of characters, and that like that can unlock characters for you, and it can lock out characters for you, or you can try to recruit them, and sometimes they say yes, and sometimes they say no. Most of the time they say yes, because like that's kind of what the game is like you start out with this ragtag group of like, you know, revolutionaries effectively, and you're trying to build an army. So like the game is trying to get you to get these characters. So in general, you want to keep them. But like one of the first ones you do, you're actually supposed to execute the guy. I brought this up a couple episodes ago, but like there's like a religion that's actually true. Like when we were talking about the demo, and one of the characters you try to get is an angel. Mm-hmm. Well, when you do her little quest that introduces her, it's about a guy who's been stealing, I think it's the Divine Shards. But he's been stealing a bunch of basically religious artifacts, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the angel, when you, like, I was like, well, I want to recruit him because I don't have a thief yet. So I want to recruit this thief, right?
Yep.
Makes sense. He just fucks off. And the angel goes, man, I'm really disappointed in you that you would let somebody that evil live. And if you kill him, you get 15 Divine Shards. And you had to turn in 30 to unlock her.
Okay. Okay.
And you only find those Divine Shards just sitting around on the map. So like you're supposed to kill that guy.
So did you save scum and go back and kill him, or did you like Google?
No. It? I was reading that on Reddit. And I found out but I haven't, there was one that I didn't just go with my gut and get him. There was one, somebody basically posted like a post on Reddit, was like, hey, just a heads up, if you're interested in getting this character and this character's awesome, you have to do this one specific thing. So like you had to, like, you're helping liberate his town, and you do, and then he fucks off like really far north in the continent. Well, if you go straight to the next fight, there's some character interactions you miss, and it's all character driven. So if like you go straight to the next fight, you don't end up talking to him and revealing to him that his brother is actually already on your side.
Oh, gotcha.
And then he won't join you. And what he does is, since he doesn't know that, because his brother's kind of like, they're both princes, and his brother doesn't want to be a prince, so he's disguised himself as just like a mercenary.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows. But if you go up north, they actually interact, and since he's on your side, the other prince joins your side as well. If you don't, he sticks around and becomes basically the king. He rules as prince and eventually becomes king of this like kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like it's all like character driven stuff. It doesn't have the depth of something like a dedicated like Final Fantasy VII, where you've got like 7 or 8 characters that are fleshed out across, you know, 60 hours of storytelling, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got 60 characters that are fleshed out around 50 hours of storytelling. So like, but each one is actually done really well, even though they're kind of short, and they do focus on like the prime cast. And there's just, a lot of them are like, you go there and you're like, oh, I liberated this thing. And they're like, yeah, I'm this shaman. Shaman, by the way, kicks fucking ass. It's probably the best debuff character, relatively speaking, of any game I've ever played. It's fucking busted as shit. Like, and you realize it as soon as you play against a couple shamans. Because they do attack down or defense down. And it's by percentages. And they will fuck your shit up. They can't kill you. But they can make it so, like if you get hit twice with their debuff, you just now deal 1 damage every hit.
Oh, got you. You're not even fighting anymore.
Yeah, you're done fighting unless you get rid of that debuff.
Gotcha.
And they do it, so the way the combat, you're in formations, you have 2 rows of 3. So you got, and they can do their debuffs by row. So they can hit with, like, one shaman can hit up to 3 people at once. And again, now you tack on to that the gambits where you tell them who to prioritize and which ones to use. And all of a sudden, shamans are going, yeah, I'm going to start this fight out with all your attacker guys get minus 50% attack.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, like, they're really good. The game's fucking super fun. So, like, I played it for fucking, like, 12 hours straight on Saturday. I got up, started playing at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning and didn't stop until, like, 6. I didn't even eat. Literally, I lost 2 pounds. I'm not bullshitting. I lost 2 pounds over the weekend. And not like your weight just fluctuates, lost 2 pounds. I am legitimately down 2 pounds.
Just from eating less?
Just from barely eating over the weekend, just playing this fucking game. Like, my eyes were starting to hurt on Sunday. That's why I stopped playing. Because I was just stared at the... I played for probably legitimately 24 hours over this past weekend. The game's fucking fantastic. It is... I'm playing on... This is the only downside of currently where I'm at. I'm playing on the easiest difficulty, and because, like, I continued my demo save file, because that was one of the cool things about the demo, is you could actually just keep going on your save.
That's nice.
Well, I didn't realize it, but when I started the demo, I just picked storyline just so I could learn the rules of the game.
Yeah.
And didn't realize you couldn't change the difficulty once you started a difficulty playthrough.
Oh, so you're stuck on easy.
So I'm stuck on easy. Now, I will say two things about this. One, when you first start out, easy was still, there's still, because there's a ton of mechanics, it's probably not a bad idea to start on easy. By the middle of the game, had I, like, I was still fighting stuff before I learned that you could multi-gambit the same thing. And, like, really, and I'm not even, I wouldn't even say I'm good at the gambits. I'm just competent at them at this point. Like, that changed a lot. And that's probably where the difference is. Like, had I not figured that out, the storyline difficulty would have been fine. Like, it's still easy, but it's not. Now, I just curb stomp everything. Like, I'm just in a, I'm still doing everything, but, like, I roll in there and, like, I basically can't lose. So I'm just pushing towards the end, and I'm going to restart it. I'm going to start it on normal, because I don't know what the difficulty actually changes. If it's more enemies, if they're stronger, if they're smarter, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how that's going to change. I'd love it if they were just smarter. Like, if they kind of had preset, like, storyline gambits are kind of mediocre. Like, they're, and then, like, normal, they're where they should be. And then, like, expert, they're, like, actually, like, as like, the players, the, yeah, the designers were like, I'm going to make these teams and make them tough. That kind of thing.
Player level.
Because the weird thing is like, the Colosseum, I don't know if that's affected by the storyline difficulty. So I don't know. But, like, I crushed the Colosseum. And, but, like, if I go into... Because there's online and offline. And you can play against other people. Because, I mean, it's not even particularly difficult. You just go in there and... Because, like, you, it's all just pre-set up teams, right?
Yeah.
So you just go in there and do it. Well, like, it's hard for me to think that they would just allow you to play on storyline but then play against people on expert. I don't know if that would matter or not.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
If, but it depends on how many people are playing the game. Yeah, are there enough people that, like, you can go to the Colosseum and play against a bunch of scrubs doing it through easy? Are there a bunch of easy profiles, or are there, or it also could be that there's a like a leveling, a balancing that happens at the Colosseum. That's a pretty common thing where, like, things get balanced down. So, for example, I remember Destiny, when I used to play Destiny Online, they did this where, like, as you leveled up, you got access to, like, really high-level guns that did a ton of damage in the campaign or story mode. But when you took those guns to like, the PvP online, they all got leveled out.
Yeah.
And, like, what was funny was there, like, for a while at one point, the best, like, assault rifle was the stock, like, level one assault rifle you start the game with. Because after it all gets leveled out, it had, like, a really smooth rate of fire, or had a high rate of fire, a smooth recoil. It was the best gun for PvP.
Because every gun hits for X amount of damage.
Yes, they all get, and it's not, they don't get, like, leveled out even, but just because you got end game loot, it doesn't do end game damage anymore. It just, it does what the, basically what the developers think is an appropriate amount of damage for an arena.
Yeah.
So it could be something like that, where they there's systems in that go in and they level the playing field, and you basically are just playing against who has the best coding in their characters.
Yeah. So, which would be cool. Like,
would
that'd
be very cool.
obviously the game, in my opinion, that's not really, I look at the PvP as kind of icing on the cake, or maybe even the candles on the cake. Like, that's not what I'll fuck around with it, but like, I can very easily imagine that being solved pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Within like a meta will basically boil down, and it's like you're gonna do one of these three or four builds, like, because it's a fairly popular game. Like, it's not huge, but like, it's all like people, non-gamer people are talking about it on Twitter and shit like that. Like, it's making a little bit of a wave, a little splash, yeah, in the pond, so to speak. But it's fantastic. Like, it is. I was like, I'll go back and play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Since I played Unicorn Overlord, I have no interest. Like I'm not like, oh my god, I gotta beat this so I can go back to Final. Nope. Like,
yeah.
I just like the Final Rebirth is good. This game is amazing.
Nice.
Yeah, it's like really fucking good.
I'm glad you found a game. We were talking about, like, I kind of wish you could find a game. I was hoping Rebirth was that, like, oh, just get sucked into a game and do nothing but it for a while. Yeah. I'm glad you found it.
It does have the here's the funny thing. I was complaining about the open world stuff in Rebirth. Overlord's got the same type of shit. It's way more entertaining.
Yeah, they just did it better.
It's just done better. There's around the same amount of stuff, but it's just like, it's just way more interesting. I guess part of it is just, it's a little quicker and it's a little more simplified and not like tedious. Mm-hmm. So like, for example, you got like, you're in this country, right? And it's full of a bunch of villages and towns and shit like that. Well, in order to, because all these towns, the whole place is, like, the whole continent is engulfed in war. Yeah. So, like, all these towns need repaired. Well, when you repair them, you can then station, like, you gather resources. So there's like, the resources basically just spawn. They have little spawn points. You pick it up, and then every now and then more will just spawn there, and it'll just kind of accrue. Mm-hmm. But when you upgrade these towns, like, you can, there's a few things you get for doing that, and then you can station a guard there, which is basically you just pick one of your characters and put them at that town, and then they gather the resources for you periodically. Oh, nice. So like, you just kind of like snowball to the point where, like, I don't, it just wasn't tedious. Like, I was actively going across the map just trying to find everything I could, and I'd be like, oh, there's a battle over there to the left. Okay, cool. But I can see like six resources I need to run over here, and I just grab them. Okay, cool. Am I got it? Did I have it all? Cool, got it. Okay, now we'll do the battle. And like unlocking the map and like fixing all the towns and all that kind of shit. It was all just it was simple, but it was very satisfying to do. So like, it gave you kind of some stuff to do in between the battles that wasn't like super grindy necessarily, but it was kind of some busy work for you to kind of have a little bit of a down, like have some downtime. So it's not just battle after battle after battle, because I could see how that would get like kind of wear on you, especially probably on the higher difficulties where you're like, by the middle of the game, I was just kind of curb stomping everything. But like on the harder difficulties, I don't imagine that's going to be the case. And some of these battles have a lot of shit going on. So like they'll take like 20 or 30 minutes. So like doing those back to back is, you know, probably could get a little repetitive. So it's like, hey, do a battle. Now go fuck around on the map and go find some hidden stuff. And like one of the ways they bring the main cast of characters in is like each continent has its own, or each continent has a set of like things. So like, for example, our character's name's Chloe. And like, you'll be moving around. There's a lot of ruins, like destroyed castles and whatnot. You move up to one, and she's like, oh, hey, I searched through this thing and I found this thing. So like, that's what she does. Whereas like your witch, you get, there's these journals and there's these like monuments that are like, that have carvings of different animals. Well, you had to first find a journal, and that will tell you the order you activate these monuments in. Then you had to find the monuments and activate them. And when you do, you get a pretty sweet piece of loot, like that kind of stuff. So it's just like, it's just a little puzzle to do. And you can fast travel anywhere you've unlocked, you can fast travel, and you move around pretty quickly on the map. And the way random battles work, they're not really random. There'll be enemies moving around. When you bump into them, you have to fight them. If you would lose that fight, you get kicked back to your previous town. Mm-hmm. If you win, they're gone forever.
Oh, nice.
And there's a battle skip. So like, it will do the calculations ahead of time and tell you where, how, if you're going to win or not. And you can have, I think, like 10 crews. And you can toggle between them. So you're like, say you're running across and it's like, oh, fuck, here comes a bunch of armored guys. Swap to my armor killing crew.
Yep.
Kill them. Skip that battle. So like random battles, like if you don't want to fuck with them, like you just skip them. And
it just gives you the choice to participate in it or not. So right. long as you've like built the team that can beat it, they let you skip it. And that's
correct.
That's such a good thing. Cause like there's lots of times like I want to do the fight. I enjoy fighting back and forth and whatnot. And sometimes it's like, I'm just trying to get to an objective and these are a nuisance. So the ability right. to be like, nah, just pass.
And guess what? You still get the fucking reward whether you yep. watch the battle or not. Cause like yeah. the way the, there's a currency called honors and like killing these guys, eventually you'll get up, like I'm on the last continent, you get like 5 for killing them. It starts out at like 1 or 2 and it costs like a progressing. So the way you unlock your stuff is so you can have up to 5 people in your, one of your crews. And it starts out with 2 and then 3. And like it costs honor to upgrade that. Mm-hmm. And eventually it costs like 200 to go from 4 to 5. And the each class, because I didn't even mention this, each class has a second fucking class. So like for between 30 and 50 honor, you basically promote them and they go from being a knight to a great knight. And then gotcha. Their fucking stat ranges change and like all kinds of stuff. Dude, the game is like surprisingly deep and wide. Like there's just a ton of stuff to do. So like there was units that I thought sucked until I started actually fucking around with them. Like flying units, I didn't think were going to be very good, and they're amazing. Like they're so good. So
well, good. I mean, it's awesome that you found a nice, deep, complex game. How much was it?
It was $50. It was, I think it was either $49 or $59. So it was a full price game, but
that's a lot of money from a smaller dev company. Is it a small indie company?
I wouldn't call them like indie, but like they are, it's called Vanillaware, I think.
They're probably not AAA.
They're not big. I guess it's an independent game company, but I don't know. Like indie to me means just radically different shit. Like the Stardew Valley was made by one guy.
I mean, like there's a whole tag on Steam for indie games and like indie games, obviously a lot of them get really polished and look really good, but indie games are kind of like poor graphics or a distinct art style and like a lot rougher and a lot smaller and a lot, but I mean like that era might be kind of, maybe we need to define those games differently, I guess, because like Power World's an indie development company, and like that game is fairly polished and huge and everyone, and it was an amazing game. And I think Helldivers is considered an indie company, and they're obviously an incredibly popular game. Like indie games are taking the world by storm.
There needs to be a good descriptor, and maybe there is, and I just don't know it, between, like, so...
I mean, they're probably,
there's
like...
There's AAA.
They're probably, like, AA titles.
Well, that's like, what I mean, but, like, how often do you hear somebody refer to something as, like, AA or A, right?
Yeah, like, which maybe we just need to start doing, because, like, I mean, you have games, like, from, you know, shithole developers that are AAA titles, and then you have shithole developers that make quadruple A titles, and then you have all these developers that are making AA titles that are fucking amazing.
Right. Like, this company, their first game came out in 2006. They've made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is their 9th game.
Any like, of them, like, popular or good? Like, anyone would recognize?
I don't recognize any of them, but it's a Japanese developer, and I don't know. I've heard of Muramasa, the Demon Blade. That came out for Wii. I've heard of that. So there's Fantasy Earth, The Ring of Dominion, which was a PC game. Grim Grimoire and Odin's Sphere for PlayStation 2. I have not heard of either of those. Kumatanchi for DS. Miramasa the Demon Blade for Wii. Grand Knight's History for PlayStation Portable. That sounds familiar. I didn't play it, but I think I looked at that. Because I was looking... I'm a big Final Fantasy Tactics guy, as everybody knows, and I was looking for something to scratch that itch, but I didn't get it. And then Dragon's Crown and 13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim, which I've also kind of heard of, but I haven't played any of their other games. So
I pulled up a thing about them. So apparently Dragon's Crown, according to some, IGN, is one of Vanillaware's, it's one of their most controversial titles, but it's also one of the best, I'm just quoting here, one of the best 2D side-scrolling beat-em-ups released in the past 15 years. So apparently, they're a pretty popular company. If IGN classifies their game as one of the best 2D scrollers in the last 15 years, that's saying something.
What is it, PlayStation 3?
Didn't even notice.
Yep, I'll have to check it out. It's PlayStation 3. I'm looking at the thing. So it also generated controversy for its exaggerated character designs and sexualized female characters. I can tell you now, that's 100% true in Unicorn Overlord as well.
I saw some images where it's just like, it's classic weeb art.
It's like non-nude fan service. Yeah. And like, I personally, it doesn't do anything for me, but I also don't hate that it's there. Like, I usually just laugh at it. Like, Amanda and I will just sit around this. I'll be like, look at this. And like, one of the main characters, her name's Scarlet, her boobs are comically fucking large.
That kind of thing has almost become an inside joke. There are plenty of people who like legitimately like it, and that's fine. But like, to me, it's an inside joke where it's like, yep, that's what women armor looks like in weeb anime games. That's how the best woman sword fighter in the world has triple D cups and wears a sash over them to fight in.
Strategy, Jake. It's strategy.
Yeah, it's all about, well, you don't want to be hindered in your movement.
Yeah, but like I don't get anything out of it. But I also have mixed feelings about the whole, like, there's a big push to like push like fake modesty through video games as well, and I also hate that. Like, what I want is game creators to make the product they want to make, and then I'll decide whether or not I like it.
Yeah.
What I don't like is third parties telling me what I am allowed to watch or like. They can fucking get bent.
I remember Asmongold. I have no idea what Asmongold does on the internet other than make clips for TikTok, or people make clips of his stuff for TikTok, and plenty of people hate him, plenty of people like him. I don't fucking know. He's funny, and he has funny takes on things, or interesting takes, in my opinion. And I remember when Pal World came out, because there was a huge discussion on the internet where everyone was saying, oh, Pal World's a ripoff of Pokemon, at least in its art style or its idea of like these small creatures you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
And the internet argued with itself for a couple of weeks on, like, you know, is it okay just to copyright Pokemon? And obviously, with Pal World selling dozens of millions of copies, that people decided, yeah, it's fine. And Asmund weighed in on it on a video he's talking about, where he's like all people don't care about. People don't care about, they don't care about plagiarism. They don't care about copyright laws. They don't care about people fucking animals. They care about good gameplay loops and fun games. And if you just do that, like, and make the characters hot, that's all people want.
Yep.
That's what 90% of people want, a fun game with hot characters. And I agree,
100%.
There's this big movement on the internet where, like, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say, like, oh yeah, I want my game to have like hot guys and hot chicks in it. And most people are like, no, I just want to look at hot guys and hot chicks when I'm playing my game. Like, again, you don't have to, right? A game doesn't become infinitely worse if everyone in the game is a solid 6 out of 10. But it's nice if I'm going to play this game for 20 hours to look at a hot chick.
Right. Well,
for me, and for some people it might be a guy or whatever, but like, I like looking at attractive people while I'm playing a game.
Well, part of that too, and this is not necessarily game related, but just a brief commentary on our society, is like, our society, and in my opinion, successful societies, look at beauty as aspirational. So like, if I see, I mean, just as an example, like, and I this is a good example actually, because I personally think he changed what was perceived as attractive when this movie came out. So Brad Pitt in Fight Club was fucking shredded, right? Mm-hmm. And that one movie is actually credited in a lot of circles for changing the overall tone of what, like, buff guys should look like. Because in previous stuff, going back from, like, the 90s and 80s, you had people like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger, like, giant dudes, right? Dolph Lundgren, the governor of Minnesota, I can't remember his name, the wrestler guy who turned into the governor of like Minnesota, and he was in Predator. No, like, just basically a bunch of giant fucking dudes. Like, they basically look like pro wrestlers that decided to act. Bodybuilders.
The bigger muscles, the better.
Correct. Well, Brad Pitt changed that. And like from Fight Club forward in movies, you saw a lot less of like the bodybuilder aspect and more of like the super cut lean, like still mm-hmm. has muscles, but like not a fucking ounce of fat on him. Like yeah. the abs, the fucking cum gutter look, that kind of thing. But it's still, so like what we perceived as attractive changed, but it was still an aspirational thing. So mm-hmm. it was just like, we want to look like that. Now, in my opinion, a lot of the way people look at beauty is they look at it with like envy or jealousy. And like they see like beautiful characters, men and women, and they don't look at like, hey, it'd be great to look like that. Maybe I should try to pursue that. Or like beauty in and of itself is a good thing. And we've gone more towards like,
it's an insult to what they look like now.
Correct.
Yeah.
So like, yes, you know, the characters in Unicorn Overlord, they're all exaggerated. Like they're what, you know, the designers think are beautiful people with different figures. Right. And mm-hmm. it's the same thing with the guys. It's not like there's fucking, they're all the guys are good looking. They're all fit in one way or another. There's a ton of different body types, but they all are fit and good looking, attractive characters. Yeah. And a lot of people look at that and they don't feel good when they see that. And I think that's one of the current problems going on in society. And that's one of the things that's one of the reasons why I enjoy the game. The game is a pleasure to look at. The mm-hmm. characters are great. The like the designs for the classes look good. The whole game is just beautiful. And that to me is like an inarguable good thing. Like ugliness is by definition bad. Now that doesn't mean that ugly people are bad, but like there's like if we define, and that's they're trying, I don't want to say they, but like there's this move to redefine ugly as beautiful. Yeah. And I just violently disagree with that. Like, so, and I don't want to go too deep on this because this is stuff we don't normally talk about on the podcast, but we kind of touched on it a little bit. And
I
get like
what you're saying, though. It's like, I feel like to be interested in what would be objectively a beautiful person is like, you should be shamed for that. You should feel shame for finding interest or being attracted to an objectively beautiful person, because that's not what everyone looks like. And it's like, well, yeah, I know, but like, that's kind of why they're like, it makes them extra attractive. Cause like that's it's unique, it's special,
right? Like representation has taken over, like, and I just fundamentally disagree with that premise where it's like, I'd rather have my characters look like average people. And it's like, but they're not average people. This guy's literally a prince.
Yep.
And that princess is a princess, and like there's two more princes, and like there's two elf princesses. Mm-hmm. And I guess what, I can fucking marry them all. Because that game also has a really deep rapport system. Like, there's cutscenes for, like, all these characters. Just, it's awesome.
It's not surprising. It's also, this came out of Japan or Asia. Right.
Well, and they haven't fallen victim to a lot of this nonsense. So, yeah. Like, to be fair, it was the same thing when Final Fantasy VII came out. They were actually, people were using Rebirth to ridicule other games. Because they'll take, like Horizon Zero Dawn, and they'll take the actress who does the motion capture and like who they base the character on, and then they take this beautiful woman and then they make her look ugly in the game, whereas Japan is like Square Enix is like, you know what, Tifa, she had big tits back in the day, guess what, she has big tits today.
Still
too
has big tits.
and guess what we're gonna do, we're gonna go to Costa del Sol, which is a resort, and we're gonna have you prance around in a fucking swimsuit, and Tifa and Aerith are gonna follow you around in fucking bikinis.
Yep.
Because I mean, like, that's what people want to fucking play.
It's the beach episode, man. Every like people, a lot of people haven't watched a lot of animes where every anime has a beach episode where the animes were like, look, we get it, you want to see them in bikinis and swimsuits, we'll do it for an episode,
right?
And well, so they did it for their game.
The funny thing is, to me, like, we have, this is what I was kind of getting at with the false modesty of all this stuff. Porn is ubiquitous, and like, people will simultaneously make that argument where it's like, well, you can, why do you need to see Tifa in a bikini when you could just hop on Pornhub and do anything you want to do? And it's like, well, I don't necessarily agree with the Pornhub thing,
mm-hmm.
but like, can you not see how if you are okay with hardcore pornography being accessible to literally everyone, why the hell do you even have an opinion on Tifa?
Why is it a problem that this character has large breasts and wears a swimsuit for an hour?
Right. And it's the same people saying that. And it's just like, shut the hell up. Like, if that, like, if your opinion on pornography is it should be free and easy to access by everyone, you do not get an opinion on whether or not Tifa walks around in a bikini.
Yeah.
Or at least I don't want to hear it. You're free to have it. I don't want to hear it. It your opinion's fucking stupid.
I agree. Like, yeah, I get what you're saying.
So, like, the only reason I'm talking about any of this stuff is, like, I don't like when this shit gets pushed into video games. And there's whether I'm sure people listening have heard of some of the stuff, and I don't want to go too deep on it because it's not what we talk about here. But, like, there's a company that's going around just doing this kind of crap in games. And they've kind of blown up with Gamergate 2 or whatever, right? That's in all over the news.
Very tangentially been hearing about it, and I had to actually Google it the other day because I missed the big wave, and so like all I've seen and heard was reaction videos to it, and I've been trying to piece together what the fuck's been going on.
Yeah, I don't even know the details, so I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to go too deep on it because it's not something I've done a deep dive on, and I don't want to just be talking out of my ass. From what I understand, there's a company called Sweet Baby Inc. that's been responsible for a lot of the stuff I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's blown up, basically. I don't know the details. I'm not huge on it. I mainly focus on the games themselves. But, like, anybody who's been paying attention to these trends notices these trends.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just, it's nice that it's kind of nice that, like, getting some attention, like, hey, this isn't necessarily a good thing. Like, quit hiring these outside consultants to, like, ruin your fucking game.
Yeah.
Like, just make your game. And it'll be the same thing. Baldur's Gate 3, you literally fuck a bear.
Yep.
Like, they use that as an ad.
Yep.
And the same people will be like,
It was a joke about Baldur's Gate 3 that everybody's trying to fuck everybody the whole game. It's hard to avoid a romantic sexual relationship in Baldur's Gate 3.
Right. It's just like, now to be, I think that's taking it too far. You know what I mean? But, like, you know what I did? I didn't go on a campaign against Baldur's Gate 3. I just didn't buy the game.
Yeah.
And that's where I sit. Like, I probably won't buy it. That doesn't really, really appeal to me. And in their defense, apparently that was a glitch that was making everyone super horny, and they fixed that.
Yeah. So. It was funny, though. Like,
They leaned into it, too. Like, that was all over.
Oh, yeah. The internet fell in love with it. And then we in private were like, that it's kind of ridiculous, right? Like, it's kind of a fucking joke. And then they came out later like, yeah, it was kind of a little exaggerated. It wasn't really supposed to be that insane. Well, yeah, like, the internet loved it. They leaned into it. It was the talk of the town, which, I mean, in their defense, like, they should lean into it. If it's getting positive feedback, like, they should lean into it and advertise their game with it. If people are interested in it, yeah, advertise the fuck out of your game with it and then fix it later.
Well, so I've got two things to follow up there. So one, in my opinion, this is just another thing I like about Unicorn Overlord. You can romance almost any one of the named characters in the game. And they all have like three little cutscenes you can watch, and then you can eventually marry them. And it's actually part of the story, right? That's great.
Do the cutscenes involve their clothes slowly disappearing?
No.
I'm not as interested anymore.
And then two, let me think, what was I going to say? Oh, with D&D, the funny thing is, like, you've DM'd enough to know this. It's probably happened in your group. I know for a fact it's happened in my groups. So you and your party walk into a bar.
Mm-hmm.
There's always the one guy who's like, I want to hit on the waitress.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, it's me.
Right.
You're just flirting with me.
That's, to me, that was something that, one of the reasons why, like, Baldur's Gate 3, being able to romance people, I do think is important in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to be the degree to which they accidentally set it at, but it's just like, that is what D&D players do. Yep. I've like, as far as a group, not every session, but I've never had a D&D group that didn't at one point devolve into that. And part of it is just one care, like one player just trying to make the DM feel awkward. Cause it's just like, I'm going to flirt with her.
Dude, we played for like four sessions and you tried to fuck a god.
Yeah.
And I was like, I had to look at you and be like, Matt, you can't make a pass at the Raven Queen. And then you roll a 20. And I was like, well, she notices you.
Right. Because what else? We're here to have fun and goof off.
Yes.
And like, so like, I'm not going to sit there and try to flirt with you, like literally, because like you said, that's weird. But like,
My girlfriend at the time and our friend has to sit and watch us just have a bromance in front of them.
Right. We're not going to do that. But, like, people goof off in D&D, and people should be able to goof off in Baldur's Gate 3. Like, that, like, sure, let it rip. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I just have, like, really kind of mixed feelings about the whole thing. A lot of it feels just super disingenuous and, like...
Well, I mean, and, like, again, to get super deep into something we don't ever fucking talk about, but, like, based on the widespread response of the internet, we are not alone in this kind of, like, passive, unhappy response to the movement of games.
Right.
So, I mean, again, like I said, we'll see what happens, and... I know a little bit here and there, but I would rather just wait until the end when, like, a bunch of comprehensive discussions get posted and I can read through them and have a better understanding of what's going on versus the half a story here, a third of a story there, one side of a story here, and then make a bunch of comments on that.
Yeah. I only vaguely know what the hell happened with Gamergate 1.
Like, I never even heard of Gamergate 1, so.
Yeah. It's a thing. It was a big thing. It's something to do with, like, women in journalism and game journalism, something like that. Don't fucking, like, come at me or flame me. I don't, like, this isn't my cup of
tea. We don't know what we're talking about.
I just know what happened, and I know, like, so to me, there's like three Gamergates, even though Gamergate 2 is called Gamergate 2, and that's the one currently going on. The GameStop stock thing was Gamergate 2. It just wasn't called that. And to me, I look at it as, like, it's not technically what they are, but to me, the Gamergates are when you finally cross the line and we've had enough that we're going to step away from the fucking controller and say something about it.
Yeah.
That's what that is. And it was, you know, nonsense in journalism or whatever it was. Then, like, hey, we're not going to allow you to fucking ruin GameStop. Mm-hmm. And now the Sweet Baby Inc. thing. So, like, I was all about the GameStop thing. Like, I was literally, I'd actually was on the subreddit before it happened, because it was on, what the fuck was it? I want to say it was Wall Street Bets on Reddit. And
for
there was
the
a dude.
GameStop thing?
Yeah, that's where it started. It actually all started from a Reddit user, and I was actually involved in that before it happened, so I saw the whole thing happen.
That's cool.
So, like, I wasn't involved in it. I never bought any of the stock or participated in any of that stuff. But, like, I watched it all play out from beginning to end. It was actually really exciting, and I was rooting for them. But it turns out, it turns out the whole game is rigged. And if you try to go against these mega corps, they just change the rules.
Yeah, no shit.
And that's exactly what happened.
They'll just pass laws against you.
Well, they just made it so, like, because everyone was using Robinhood. That was the big one.
Yep.
And they just made it so you can't buy GameStop stock. They can make it. Yeah. They made it so you can only sell it.
Yeah. What a crock of shit that was.
Yeah. The whole thing was bullshit. But Deep Fucking Value. That was the guy's name. I just remembered it. That guy was, like, worth a ton of money in GameStop. Like, hundreds of millions of dollars. And he wouldn't sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and everyone was just like, he was, that was... It was really cool. The whole thing was super cool. I wish we had a podcast when that was going on. That would have been awesome to talk about. But anywho, back to gaming. Play Unicorn Overlord. It's, like, by far, I can't imagine me personally having a game of the year that isn't this. Like, I don't know what else could come out this year that I personally would like more than this. It's everything I've been wanting in a game lately. Like, it's just perfect. Like, I'll give it one critique. Every now and then, some of the dialogue sounds a little tinny. Like, it just wasn't... They didn't use great recording equipment on some of it. Like... that's what I can come up with to fucking critique this game.
There's the nitpicking we're gonna do on it.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. And I wholeheartedly endorse this. If you like RPGs, it's not an action game by far. You don't even control your characters in the actual fights. You just position them around a battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more to it than that, but, like, that's fundamentally what the game is, and it's fantastic.
Well, good.
So, what about you? Well, hey, we're now we're in patrons.
Oh, yeah. Let me get let me grab our list of patrons real quick. I'll be right back.
Yeah, then you can talk about your life.
So, huge shout out every week to our patrons. Thank you guys for hopping into the Patreon, supporting us in such a direct and meaningful way. Also, shout out to everyone who gets into the Discord and posts all kinds of fun stuff. Like, I believe it was Asphalt was putting up how he did in the recent SCGCon Philly. People talking about Warhammer. All kinds of fun stuff. Some pre-modern stuff occasionally. But shout outs to Asphalt, Emperor, Ramblin' Rogue, Ashley, Eric, Monowolf, Ethan, CJ, Ted, Mumbledown, Rob M, Limit of Questions, Derek T, His Forest, and Jasper. Thank you all for being patrons. Thank you all for being a part of the community. And thank you all for helping keep the show going. As for me, it'll be a little shorter. I don't have an hour of things to talk about this week. I finally re-downloaded or re-updated Tarkov Arena. They went through and wiped probably a month or two ago, and they did a couple things with the wipe. One of the things it did is they upgraded to the new armor system. So Tarkov itself went through a huge armor rework, which I think was overall better for the game, and it made high-level armor a lot less overpowered. Where it used to be in the game, if you had level 5 armor, like at level 5 vest, basically everywhere the texture of the vest covered you, you had level 5 armor. And they went through and they completely reworked it so that you literally have plates places, and that's where you're armored. So if you've ever seen a bulletproof vest, mm-hmm. you would know that you wear your vest and you have like Kevlar in the front and maybe even like a ballistic plate in the front. But that plate is a specific size. So if you were to get shot in the side, the plate, the high level plate you wear in the front is not protecting your side at all.
Yep.
And even so, like, there are some pieces of gear where like you'd have Kevlar and then you'd have like elastic bands over your shoulders. Well, those bands no longer have armor in them. So they really fine-tuned the armor covers. And that made armor a lot weaker, where if you could shoot someone, you know, in the armpit, or if you could shoot someone in the neck, even if they're wearing a really high-level helmet, it doesn't protect them. Like, their helmet and their vest doesn't cover their neck. So there's a big upgrade to Tarkov. They've brought that upgrade over to Arena. So it's honestly a lot easier to kill people. It's easier to get headshots. It's easier to power through high-level armor. The other thing they did, and the reason why I've been playing it almost nonstop for the last couple days, and I actually, like, whether alone or with my friends, look forward to playing it, is they implemented a ranked matchmaking system, and not, like, playing ranked versus unranked, because they have that. It's tiered. So my biggest complaint, and it was such a struggle to get through, and I basically never played alone, because before you just played with everybody, and it was separated by like your skill level. So like I'm a D+ or a D or a D+, the very bottom, and so I play with the very bottom of the barrel, relatively speaking. But you would queue in and you just pick whatever class you wanted, and like you could pick a level 1 class. And then your opponents pick level 5 classes. So, like, I had, when I was playing with my friends, because they know a lot more about than I do, the class I was going through, like, a lot of them would have helmets. And he would, because he could recognize all the classes really well, we'd spawn in, he'd look at the classes they picked, and he'd go, just take your helmet off, there's no point in wearing it. All of their armor penetrates your helmet every single time, there's no reason to wear it. And so that was my gaming experience playing Tarkov, was trying to struggle through the lower tiers to get to where I could pick a high tier. And as soon as I got to a high tier, I played Butcher, which is one of the best classes there was. Like, I didn't become a god, but I started, like, getting kills, winning fights, surviving fights, and participating in the game. There were several instances playing where, because one of the cool things Tarkov Arena did was they implemented kill cams. So one, you can see when people are being fishy because you can watch them kill you. And it gives you some information. You know, how many times they hit you, how much damage, how many times you hit them, and how much damage. And there'd be multiple times where, like, I would get well over 10 hits, do 140 damage, and then lose the fight. And they walk away, heal up, and they're relatively fine.
Mm-hmm.
So now, with it being locked into Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3, you get to actually play and fight. And the fights are, like, kind of balanced. Now the downside of it is, like, you divide the player group, and matchmaking got worse in terms of waiting times. More often we're waiting for a couple minutes between matches sometimes, and that just sucks. Like, there's no getting around that. But the matches we play, like, I actually get to play, such that I enjoy playing even without my friends online. It does kind of suck. Like, when I got started a couple weeks or so, or a month after them, they all hopped on as soon as it wiped, and I was on a breather from it. So they were all playing Tier 2, and nobody wanted to play Tier 1. And if you want to play Tier 2, you have to unlock it. You have to get to where you have at least 5 classes available in Tier 2. Because the other thing they implemented is each team can only have one of each class, or one of each character. So they're all named. So, like, you have, like, Butcher, and you have, like, Triton, all kinds of, like, Reaper. And it used to be you could run 5 Reapers if you wanted to. And you get some kind of crazy team comps where, like Butcher was a great example, where Butcher was, it was a, at the, at back then it was basically they were hundreds, but it was tier 1 to tier 5. And he was a tier 5, maybe even tier 6, but no one played the tier 6s because the tier 5s were better. There's basically tier 5. And he was like the best tier 5, and he was just absurdly hard to kill. And so you'd run against 5 butchers, and it's just fucking hard to kill these people. They balanced that out to where you can only pick one of each. So now if you want to play in tier 2, you have to have 5 tier 2 characters unlocked. That way, you know, just in case you load in, everyone can't take all your tier 2 characters. You have to have something to pick.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start, you have to grind through tier 1 until you've unlocked 5 tier 2s. So that meant for a while I couldn't play with them because, like, they'd already did all the tier 1 stuff. They didn't want to. They wanted to play tier 2 and get to tier 3. And the gameplay in tier 1 is fun, and it is engaging, and it is balanced relatively well. But it's also kind of ridiculous and kind of funny. So, like, while playing tier 1, I've had multiple instances where me and a dude will turn a corner on each other. We will mag dump each other. Obviously, we don't hit every shot, but we'll mag dump each other, run out of ammo, have to reload, and start shooting each other again. Because the bullets are so bad. The armor's okay, and the bullets are so bad. And so there's obviously that isn't like a super fun gameplay for a lot of people, and they don't necessarily want to play a bunch of tier 1. So it divides the player base, and it divides fan groups a little bit until everyone gets back on the same level. I wouldn't change it back for anything. I think it's a phenomenal change. It's exactly what the game needed. Like I said, games feel balanced. They feel engaging. I get to actually fight people and be a part of the fights. And I was telling Matt, for the first time, I played about 50 or 60 matches of the new system. I actually feel myself improving, because every match I play, I'm engaging in the fight enough that I'm having a chance to, like, work on skills and learn. And I feel like the decisions I'm making in regards to pushing, pulling back, aiming, the decisions I'm making are impacting how the game plays out. And so I'm learning from my mistakes. I'm getting better. Like, it used to be, I'm starting to learn good peaks and good angles and where to aim. Because when I come around a corner and I've aimed at the right spots, I've just domed a dude and the fight's over. I won.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had situations where, like, I pushed in and it was aggressive, and, like, we traded shots, and I stayed aggressive, and I was able to win the fight because of that ore. You know, I went a certain direction, I poked an angle, and I got mowed down and melted and all kinds of stuff. But because they're meaningful interactions, I'm learning from them. Whereas before, it was like, hey, I turned this corner, and I aimed at the dude, and I shot him 10 times, and then I died. I don't know what to take away from that.
Right.
I don't know what to learn from that. I mean, other than, like, yeah, I full auto his head more accurately, which I'm just not going to do. So I felt myself getting much better, and I'm having a ton of fun. So this is at the first point where I would say, if anyone has been thinking about Tarkov Arena, I would buy it and try it. I think Tarkov Arena is a ton of fun right now, and I love playing it. Tarkov, I still wouldn't play. There's still a huge cheating problem. The biggest problem with Tarkov, actual Escape from Tarkov, is the cheaters, in my opinion. So when I got back into Tarkov, I think I talked to Matt about it. I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast, but I got back in kind of shortly after the wipe. And after the wipe is always the best time to play because everyone flocks back. And so the average number of cheaters goes down exponentially because we're all back. And most of us aren't cheating at that point. And so I played several matches. I played several raids. I got to level like 12 or 13. And I had plenty of times where I got in fights. I would win a fight or two. I'd lose a fight or two. But they felt engaging. Every time I lost a fight, or pretty much, I was like, yep, he shot me. I shot him. He shot me. I shot him. And I died. That's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of it, I started getting into more and more lobbies where, like, I was just getting insta-domed, you know, headshot out of nowhere. Or I'd get in a fight and I would just get melted from across the map all of a sudden. And I don't mean, like, from a mile away, but, like, I'd see someone, they'd see me, I'd shoot them once or twice, and then I'd boom, dead. I got into fights where, like, just feels like my opponent has a really impressive amount of tactical awareness for this situation. It's crazy how well they heard me and I didn't hear them. And worth noting, I did get new headphones by the time I got into the wipe, I think. I don't know if I'd upgrade my headphones or not. I did upgrade my headphones, and that was a monumental upgrade. My old headphones were not nearly good enough for Tarkov. But there was just enough situations where it just kind of felt hinky, and they got to, like, I don't want to play this anymore. I haven't played since. And so I'm still a part of the Tarkov subreddit, and the subreddit is just full of people complaining about cheaters, especially now that you can look at the profile of the people that killed you. It's just post after post after post of people being like, hey, it's cool how this player has, you know, 200 hours in game and has a 25 KD and has 1,000 kills. And just horrendously laughable numbers for this character to be playing legit. It's obvious he's cheating. And this, that isn't even the worst class of cheater, in my opinion. So obviously the person who runs around with like aimbot is horrendous to play against. Those cheaters are easy to catch, and they should be easy to catch, and those accounts should be easy to ban. The cheaters that are hard to catch and are borderline impossible to ban are the ones that have ESP or basically can see through walls. Like, you don't need a huge tactical advantage to just dominate a fight in Tarkov when I just know about where you're crouching or about where you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we can still have a real fight where I'm just aiming like I would aim and, you know, we're just fighting each other, but knowing that you moved to the left side of the bookcase instead of the right side, and I can reposition myself to just have a good angle on you when the fight engages, is a debilitating advantage to have, and is very hard to catch. That's hard to catch, someone just having good tactical awareness. But there's this huge... The community on Tarkov, or Tarkov Reddit, agrees that there's a huge problem with cheating still. And I saw a post the other day, and Tarkov fans are approaching Magic the Gathering fans in terms of how hard they will defend Tarkov. So someone put a post up, and it was saying there was a recent ban wave, or over a period of time there was a ban wave, and 33,000 accounts were banned. And what they said was, if 33,000 accounts were banned, that is approximately 1 in 30 of the people on this Reddit. So 1 in 30 posts are from a cheater. 1 in 30 comments are from a cheater. Like, that's how... And that's, I mean, clearly the ban wave didn't get everybody. And clearly some of those accounts were maybe the same person getting two accounts. But, you know, that's... They got probably a small percentage of the people cheating on Tarkov. And the pinned post from a moderator was, like, arguing against it, being like, oh, well, you know, it was over a long period of time, and, you know, it could be a bunch of people, you know, it was a bunch of people, could be a bunch of people with a bunch of accounts, or one person with a bunch of accounts, and so realistically, you should probably just cut that number in half right off the bat. And after that was, like, 75 comments being like, hey, bud, how about you don't use your mod power to pin a comment that's just speculation to someone else's comment?
Right.
How about you not shit-talk their opinion with your opinion, even though their opinion has borderline more numbers defending it than yours? Like, just this, like, we'll just cut the number in half just arbitrarily because, you know, some people will... There's money to be made in Tarkov. It's called RMTing, Real Money Traders, where... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like on Final Fantasy or whatever, where people use cheats, they'll go get tons of gear, tons of loot, and then they'll sell it to people. Like, occasionally... Like, I see posts all the time where someone will catch, they'll kill one, and they'll go loot him, and he'll just have, like, three top-tier guns, like, the absolute best guns you can get in his backpack, because yep. Someone will, either they'll go buy a bunch off the flea market, or they'll go acquire a bunch of things that you can't buy on the flea market, and then sell them to someone, and the only way you can do it is you get into a game together, and you find each other, and you drop it, and they pick it up.
Yeah.
But, like, that shit happens. Like, there's money to be made by people playing Tarkov. Cheaters. So the idea that like your account gets banned, you have to buy a new one, and you just lost $20 or $40 for the account isn't true. You can make money. And the idea that all 33,000 or a small handful of people just constantly going through accounts is not true. There is a cheater problem. What I saw another post, and it was someone being like, man, the only thing people ever fucking talk about on here is cheaters, and it's really annoying that since the mod started allowing posts about cheaters, that's every other post is a post about cheaters. And I went to comment being like, so what do you think that means?
Right.
Take that thought a little farther. Do you think that maybe that's like the number one grievance we as a community are having right now is that we are all experiencing problems with cheaters? Or do you think it's just we're all just a bunch of fucking whiny babies?
Right. It's the posts are a symptom of a problem. Like, now that could be a couple different things, but what do you think the most likely problem is?
Yeah. It's probably like a mod responded being like the number one thing people asked for last year was for us to allow posts about cheaters because they used to ban them all. So like we did what the community wanted. We let you post about cheaters and now you're bitching that we let you post about cheaters. And it's like actually the people that like those of us that are sick and tired of it are happy. We're happy to see the problem getting the attention because before this, it was just like once in a blue moon, someone would be like, man, it just feels kind of bullshit. And you'd have 1,000 keyboard warriors hop on and be like, "Just it's a skill issue. Just get good. They have better map awareness than you. They have a bunch more hours than you." And it's like, yeah, maybe. Or they spend $7 a day to be able to have ESP and aimbot.
I was going to say, yeah, they do have better map awareness than I do. I promise. They can see through fucking walls.
Yeah, they have a fucking mini map up. That's, yeah. Right. So it was really, it's, I don't recommend Tarkov. I still think Tarkov has some of the best gameplay loops there is. And one of the things they did to Tarkov, which was a good idea, they've added some microtransactions, which people were very opposed to, but I think in a good way. One of the things they did was they added that you could buy more storage space, which is fine. I don't really care about that. Like, your stash getting full is a very bad feeling when you're kind of, especially when you're grinding and you're new and you don't really know what's good and you want to, you're trying to save everything and you have a very small stash and you could spend a couple bucks and get, you know, I think it was like $40 and you can like triple your stash size. So that's fine. No improvement to the game ever. You just don't have to throw shit away. And the other thing they did was they allowed you to buy access to co-op mode, offline co-op. So before, if you and I wanted to play co-op, where we just go into a map, it's just us. We can, it's, there's no other players. There's AI players, but there's no other players. We can basically reserve a server. Mm-hmm. There's no progression, and we don't get to take anything out, but we can play the game together. We both had to have Edge of Darkness, which is like a $150 version. Well, now that they got rid of Edge of Darkness, they have made it so that you can spend like $10 or $12 to upgrade to co-op version. So if you bought the basic bitch version for $30, and I bought the basic bitch version for $30, we can spend $10 more or so, and now we can both play co-op together. We could go in and we could go to labs and we could fuck around and fight the AI and fight each other and have all kinds of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a phenomenal upgrade. And I think they also allow you to buy cosmetics now. You can buy shirts and clothes and whatnot, which is,
let it rip.
It's it's borderline. It is borderline an improvement because some clothes obviously have better camo than other clothes, but it's really minuscule. Like, yeah, if you want to spend some money to get a cool looking shirt, I don't really care. That's fine. So, like, the microtransactions they've added haven't really impacted gameplay in a negative way, so I'm super okay with them.
Yeah, but that kind of stuff, I'm 100% on board with.
Yep. If you want to, if you're gonna financially support your game via letting people pay $4 to buy a cool shirt, sounds good to me. I couldn't care less.
Well, that's all that's true, assuming they keep, as long as they're doing more, in my opinion, than just keeping the lights on. Like, if they're balancing stuff, which, I mean, you clearly just said they are. Yep. So, like, they are giving you reasons to keep playing this game. They're improving it. They're adding more content. So, like, I've played several games with microtransactions. Like, Marvel Heroes is one of them. Mm-hmm. I probably fucking spent somewhere between $300 and $500 on Marvel Heroes.
Yep.
I fucking loved that game. It was basically Marvel Diablo, and every time a Marvel movie would come out, they'd basically have it planned. So, like, Iron Man fucking 3 comes out, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they have a whole fucking, like, event for it, and you can now get, like, all the cool-ass suits from Iron Man 3.
Yeah,
and they're, like,
awesome.
$5 a piece.
Yep.
Sure, I want the fucking, like, I bought, like, almost all, I had almost every character, because you had to buy them.
Uh-huh.
And it'd be like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy comes out. So, like, now you can buy, they didn't, eventually they had all of them, but, like, right away it was only a couple of them, right? I'm like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want to play these characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just like, I'm okay doing this because you're creating more content for me. And every time you release a new character, I get, like, 30 more hours of gameplay because I'm going to make this character, level him up to max level, and if I like him, I'm going to fully gear him out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm 100% on board with this.
Yep, I'm happy to invest money in a game that I'm enjoying and that they're making it better. So,
and the game was free.
Yeah, there you go. So you're just paying like, for a game you would have paid for anyway.
Right. So yep. Just like I don't have any issue with microtransactions, assuming they're not abusive and pay to win.
Yep. Yeah. So I said I would not recommend anyone buy Tarkov. I still do not say go buy Tarkov. It's a fun game. No, I don't. I like playing it, and I talk myself into playing it sometimes. And if they came out with great anti-cheat tomorrow, and it was good, and I felt like every time I died, it was to a cheat. It was to a person playing honestly. I still might not encourage people to buy it because Tarkov as a game just encourages so many awful gameplay techniques and gameplay loops that while I love it, and there are great ways to play it, other players are just so encouraged to play in the douchiest way possible. Arena, you should buy Arena. I think if you like difficult, demanding, mil sim-esque style games, Tarkov Arena is a phenomenal shooter that is a ton of fun to play. I love playing it. I play it all the time, alone and with friends, and I think it's worth giving a shot. What do you think, Matt? We got an hour and 20 minutes in. We've probably got an hour and 10 minutes of content. You want to try and get one more topic in, or do you want to bounce over to the Patreon episode this week?
Sure. Well, let's. We haven't touched on pre-modern yet. So I have some news on that front.
Okay.
I've just this morning ordered, dude, so you know how, so let's rewind. A couple weeks ago, I was like, jokingly, I was like, man, I like TCG player just doesn't have Grim Lavamancer, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do it before I fucking sound like an idiot, right? So I'm looking for Odyssey Call of the Herds. Uh-huh. I need two or three. I don't remember exactly, but less than four. I know I have at least one. So I'm looking for them this morning, right?
Yep.
There are two for sale on TCG Player that are near mint and not foil. And wow. This is not me fucking around this time. Mm-hmm. This is the second time I've done it, and I literally just did it. Blue Dragon Store MTG and RC Trading International.
Jeez, like, if you go to Lightly Played, they're still only like 20.
Right. So like, we ordered some cards, so I got my last Old Bordered Wooded Foothill. I got my Nantuko Vigilantes. So like, I have every card in the 60 in Old Bordered. Mm-hmm. For elves. That's what we're talking about here, is pre-modern elves, at least with this list. Mm-hmm. I've got Llanowar elves that are white bordered, and I'm going to get the, I have one of them, but I'm going to get the DCI promo black bordered original art ones.
Oh, geez.
Foil.
I bet those are cheap.
They're like $50 a piece.
Jesus Christ.
Now, here's the funny thing. Briefly, I flirted with getting beta ones because the betas are only $100 a piece.
Well, but I mean, if you're going to spend $50 on, what you know, non-betas, what's the...
Right.
The jump to beta isn't as surprising as you'd think. Like, that'd be like if you could get, oh yeah, you can get, you know, revised stasises for, you know, $18, but betas are $40. It's like, well, I'd probably buy the revised, I'd probably buy the betas, because that's, beta's fucking cool.
Right. So, here's the problem, though. I want to run other foils. So, I have some foils in there. Like, I've got Foil Priest of Titania, mm-hmm. my Yavimaya Granger, which is one of as a foil. I want to get the foil Quirion Rangers. But those are $100 a piece as well. They're on my to-do list.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a foil Multani's Acolyte in there. And then I want to get the big thing is I love the Priest of Titania's, and I want to get black bordered Llanowar elves mm-hmm. in the old border or the old frame. And the funny thing is the foil ones at $50 a piece are the cheapest.
Cause nobody wants foils.
And it's just like, there's a million fucking Llanowar elf reprints. So there's a ceiling on how expensive these things can be.
True.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. It makes sense.
And it's not the most popular art. I like it for nostalgia. It's not like, it's the one with just the side-facing face,
mm-hmm.
The original art for Llanowar Elf. So like, I'm sure there's a lot of people that just would prefer to have like the 7th edition or the 9th or the 10th edition or any of the random other ones, because you know they in general the pictures just probably look a little better. Mm-hmm. That's fine, but I want these because these are the ones I played way back in the day, and like the Llanowar Elf I have. Is like I have one of them and I've had it since like high school or before. Like I got that, I won that at a fucking nice. Tournament. So like that's why I want to fucking use it. Uh-huh. And I've got there's that promo one, and then there's also they did a so not with the new border, but with the in between one somewhere around like 8th edition is I think when they swapped to the new frame. Mm-hmm. There's also Llanowar Elves with that art with that frame. So it's still an old border, but it's not the oldest one. And I have a playset of those. Like, because I like Llanowar Elf has just been my card. Llanowar Elf and Priest of Titania have been my card since I started playing Magic. Yep. Like, I've just basically, since I started playing Magic and started building my own decks, Elves was my thing. So, basically, long story short, I went ahead and just bought a playset of Time Shifted Call of the Herds, which look identical except for the set symbol.
Yep.
And those were like 30 probably, cents a piece,
probably pennies. Yeah,
yeah. So like for $5 including shipping I got my playset, and then eventually I'll when I get around to it and I have more money I'll fucking
that's where I am with like my Cursed Totems and my Tormod's Crypts. Like I much prefer like the From the Dark Tormod's Crypt or the old black border Cursed Totem.
From Mirage. Yeah.
Mirage, yeah. The problem is, like, Tormod's Crypts are, like, $8 a piece,
and cursed totems are like 20 or 30 bucks a piece. And if I buy the new version, they're like pennies. It's like 50 cents. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to justify. I get they look way better, and I will one day, but it's like it's just so hard to justify blowing $20 on a 80 cent card.
Yeah. I agree. And that was one of the reasons I was able to do it is I got like all those cards I ordered, I just traded for them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I took a hit on the trade, but like, I mean, I got a fucking ton of shit for 9 cards.
Yep.
For foils.
They weren't using
$2,300 worth of store credit for fucking a bunch of EDH foils that, like, I mean, so the Mana Crypt and the Soul Ring, I got like fucking probably $600 or $800 worth of store credit for. Jesus. I bought them for $150 a piece.
Yeah, you won on those, that's for sure.
Jeez. Like I made money on every single card I sent in, even after Card Kingdom took its cut.
Yep.
So, and they weren't reserve list, and I traded for a lot of reserve lists. So what would you rather have? A Soul Ring, who they are now trending into printing special editions into Oblivion, or Survival of the Fittest? Because that's what I did with mine.
like, what are the odds that we're within 30 months of a Secret Lair Kaladesh Inventions reprint? Yeah,
there's nothing stopping them. And like I said, we talked about it before. We're like, I really wanted to buy the Judge promo or DCI promo Priest of Titanias.
Uh-huh.
And I held off like a year or two ago or whatever because we were the whole thing with Rebecca Guay and whatnot.
Yep.
And then I turn around and buy them from Card Kingdom. And the next fucking day, they are doing a fucking old border reprint of them. Yep. For Modern Horizons 3. And it's just like, I don't mind doing that because, again, there's a huge difference. Not to mention, I hate the text of, like, the new Land of War Elves where it's just tap, add green, and it's just a mana symbol. Like, that looks hideous to me. And they're going to put that new text on the retro frame one. So it's going to look like shit to begin with, and the foiling's going to be way worse anyways.
But the art is getting reused.
The fact of the matter is there is nothing stopping them from tomorrow reprinting my Mana Crypt and my Soul Ring and shit like that. Just, and then now they're not going to like plummet, but they've already taken a hit just from when they started doing all the secret layers.
Yep.
Because the Lord of the Rings one, like, because now there's like, I had the Pimpest Soul Ring, right? Outside of like Alpha and Beta, right?
Not anymore. Yep.
Now it's up for debate.
Because they've got these numbered Elvish and Dwarvish and... Yep.
Yeah. So, like, now there's a million different options for your Soul Ring, and mine's still really cool, and it was really expensive, but there's nothing saying tomorrow they don't just fucking reprint it.
I doubt it's even in contention for some of the more expensive Soul Rings.
I think it was still the most, as far as the reasonable ones go, because it was still, like I said, it was still, like, $600, but... there's a ton of different options now. And let's just say this. It wouldn't surprise me if there were cards from the Lord of the Rings set coming close. So, like, the Judge promo, just this didn't pull up the Lord of the Rings ones, but the Judge promo one is sitting at, like, $330. And it's not the oldest border, but the, like, Morodin block artifact-looking thing with the original art. And that one's really cool, too.
Yep.
But, yeah, I don't know why... TCG player didn't pull up the Lord of the Rings ones. Oh, I guess
so
it did.
You have to look up specific. For a comparison here. So let me. Okay, so here's one I can buy right now. So the market value on your Soul Ring was like $750. There were none listed, but that's what the market value was. Do you know what I had to pay to get a unnumbered Elven Lord of the Rings Soul Ring?
No idea.
$600.
Yep.
So like. The unnumbered version, just the generic basic bitch one, is almost as much as the, and that's non-foil. I don't think these are foil. Yep, these are non-foil. It's $600 for a non-foil Soul Ring in comparison to your like hyper premium. It was the best Soul Ring ever printed.
So this is hilarious. So I just went to the numbered one, and it's a foil, right? And it's sitting on here for $5,000 on TCG Player.
Jeez,
it's
Louise.
A fucking Pringle. Shocking. You can see the curve in the goddamn picture. Mine was fucking flat as a piece of paper.
Yep. Would you look at number one? Oh my god. Yeah. From a top-down picture, you can tell it's that thing's curled out to no one's non-use.
The guy's
not
sleeve playable.
the guy that's selling his for $6,700, he did it right. He put his in a top loader for his pictures.
Right. Which to me just screams, it's Pringle.
Yeah, that thing lives in a top loader.
And they have to be. They have to. Like, I had the exact same issue with, like, foil Hole Breacher and Opposition Agent and, like, all the foils from Commander Legends. Mm-hmm. They are not fucking playable in a sleeve.
Unless you've got unless it's a fully foiled deck and they're all curling the same way.
Well, that's the thing. My Marin deck was basically fully foiled, but they weren't. The Commander Legend ones curl the wrong way.
Yeah.
So, like,
they were
all of them are fucking, like, they all coil, they all, the old ones curl towards the picture. So, like, they're concave. It's kind of hard to, I know what I'm saying. Yeah. But, like, and then the new ones curl the other way. So, like, you put them in a deck, and either A, your deck has foils in it, and they're, it actually makes it worse, because they stand out like a fuck. I could, in my 100 card deck, probably 90 of it foils. Like, I was only short, like, Gaia's yep. Cradle. Like, I had foil fetches, everything, right?
Yep.
And I only, when I started, if I won a new card, I didn't even bother buying a non-foil version. I just bought the foil version of the card and put it in there.
Yep.
I could pull out the Dual Land, Jeweled Lotus, or Opposition Agent, one of those three cards every single time. Just I would fucking mass shuffle, and then I would relax my hand and see where the cards were. Not see the art or anything, but I could see, like, just give it a little bit of space so they're not compressed together, and pull all three of them out every single time. And not miss. Like, not miss one card. Like, they are 100% marked.
Rough.
And they're like $50 a piece.
Sold them to me for cheap.
Yeah. So those, I can't imagine paying seven. Like, okay, let's see here. So the $6,000 for a Soul Ring that's a Pringle, or you could get two Mox Jets from Unlimited for that.
That's hilarious.
I know what I'd rather have.
What's a Mox Emerald cost? I know you're a big Mox Emerald fan. You can get, so beta, they start at $8,000. You can get a heavily played beta Emerald for $3,000. You can get a lightly played Mox Emerald from beta for $5,000, or a Pringle Soul Ring that is the equivalent of a dollar card.
Right. Not even a dollar anymore. Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I know which one I'd rather have.
I know which 100%. One I'd rather have.
And that's exactly why I was just like, yeah, I'm happy to get rid of my Soul Ring and my Mana Crypt. And I also had a Chrome Mox and a Crucible of the Worlds. Because I love that. The inventions, the Kaladesh inventions look beautiful. Like,
they look good.
Art on some of them wasn't my favorite, but the frame itself was fucking, like, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, they're not going to hold their value. So, like, if I'm not playing with them, why the fuck would I keep them?
Yep, it's a bad place to store money. That's for sure.
Yeah. Survival of the Fittest they're not getting reprinted anytime soon.
Probably not. And that would, like I said, that one definitely.
Yeah. Neither is, like, Curse Scroll or fucking Recurring Nightmare or any of the other cards, reserve list cards. Dude, I've never regretted over-trading, because every time you deal with a shop, you had to basically overpay for stuff. You don't get 100% of your value, right? And that's what it just is what it is. I've never regretted trading into reserve list stuff.
Yeah, it's usually the right call.
Like, that's how I got my duels. Just went to, like, not all of them, but, like, I went to a Grand Prix with Derek in Indy. And, like, I just took my EDH binder, and it was what was left that wasn't in decks. And, like, I just sat down, and I was like, all right, I want 4 Force of Wills, 4 Scalding Tarns, 4 Tempest Wastelands, 3 Volcanic Islands. And it's just like, here, take EDH stuff.
Make it happen.
Like, and I don't regret that at all. Because everything I traded him has probably gone down in value, and my fucking Volcanic Islands are, like...
Oh, yeah.
I was trading... I got them for $175 a piece.
They're probably, like, $600 still, aren't they?
Yeah. Because, like, there's two things that drive the price of dual lands, and it's Legacy and EDH.
Mm-hmm.
And Legacy, in my opinion, has a bigger impact. Because you can tell, like, when, like, Delver gets hit, like...
Yeah, they'll go down a little bit.
They'll go down a little bit. Delver's one of the best decks in the format.
Yep. Yeah, lightly play, they're still 570, 580 on TZ.
Yeah. So... Nice. Over double.
Yeah, well done. right. So as we wrap up this episode and we start getting ready for a Patreon-only episode, was there anything else we didn't cover this week that you wanted to cover?
No, not really.
Okay, so if that's the case, I think I'm all wrapped up, and so long as nothing crazy happens, I think we'll see everybody next week.
Yep, have a nice night, guys.
Welcome, step on in to the Cantrip Cartel. Jake and Matt chatting meta games while slinging some spells, casting ales, sipping on blue soup and parting some veils. Glimpse of nature once upon a time, they're telling the tale of the elvish visionaries on the wildwood prairies, where the brainstorms are so fearsome, so scary, so legendary. Queer and rangers scrounge the sylvan libraries, for when the greens and zenith would parry the clouds and turn their swords into plows. Let them rotate the crops, abundant growth in the ground. Nourish the life from the loam until it flourished unbound. Seeds of innocence burnished all the Birchlorian mounds. Gaia's cradle exhaled, carpet of flowers unwound. Birds of paradise sang, tropical islands a sound. Allosaurus shepherd danced on dinosaur stomping grounds. Jake and Matt pondered deeply all this magic they found. Through their visions doused in serum, they saw only for how to convey these magic stories aloud to the crowds, the masses. Make the voices heard, share the truth, the magic. Through ancestral visions, they felt compelled to draw every single card with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel. Draw cards with the Cantrip Cartel.